Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Monday, February 5th, 2024 in the Gregorian calendar, and the 26th of Shvat, 5784 in the Hebrew calendar. Now, let's get to the news. At this point, you're probably wondering what is going on with the potential hostage deal. I've been very cautious not to cover this too much because I recognize that things are changing daily and that Hamas keeps denying certain reports that have come out in the foreign media. The foreign media says that Hamas is going to say yes, and then Hamas says that they said no. Let's get to the most recent update we have. Israel and Hamas still hold contradictory conditions for the next ceasefire deal. Hamas's Gaza leader, Yahya Sinwar, demands a guarantee for the withdrawal of Israeli troops and an end to the war before releasing any more hostages. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says that the war will not be over until Israel's aims are accomplished, which are, quote, the elimination of Hamas, bringing back all our hostages, and ensuring that Gaza will never again represent a threat to Israel, end quote. A Hamas source says that it's likely to see a six-week truce, phases of hostages released in exchange for Palestinian prisoners who are in Israeli jails, and a potential extension of the temporary ceasefire. However, other demands from Israel and Hamas leaders have been reported as well. Economy Minister Nir Barkat calls for the deal to release all of the hostages at once rather than in phases. Hamas insists on the release of many high-profile terrorists that are known to have been behind the most deadly of attacks during the Second Intifada, which was a time in Israeli history in which Palestinians wreaked havoc in the streets, killing civilians left and right, blowing up buses. There is no lack of evidence to show that prisoners who were released from Israeli jails go back on to strike and kill again. That includes some of the people who are thought to have carried out the 7th of October attack. It's thought that there's evidence showing that some of those people were actually released in a previous hostage prisoner swap. Israeli citizens are anxious to see what the new ceasefire deal will look like. In recent weeks, far-right protesters have blocked border crossing roads to prevent trucks of humanitarian aid reaching Gaza. Meanwhile, more center and left activists, as well as the families of hostages, have been gathering in Tel Aviv on Saturday nights, calling on Israel to reach an agreement with Hamas in order to bring the hostages home. U.S. Special Envoy Amos Hochstein was in talks this weekend working on a strategy to push Hezbollah, the Lebanon-based terror group, farther away from Israel's northern border. Hezbollah is an Iranian proxy, and it has been exchanging fire almost daily with Israel since October 8th. Hochstein met with Israel's defense minister Yoav Gallant in Tel Aviv on Saturday, where he conveyed the possibility of a diplomatic solution. A three-part plan is in the works. First, the plan calls for a withdrawal of Hezbollah terrorists for 8 to 10 kilometers, or about 5 to 6 miles, from Israel's border. Second, an increase of UN forces and Lebanon soldiers in the area. Now, keep in mind that if you hear the word Lebanon soldiers and you're saying, what, aren't these Lebanon soldiers? Let me just make a distinction here. Hezbollah, you can sort of somewhat think of them as an invasive species, okay? Hezbollah is an Iranian proxy group of Lebanese people, a lot of Lebanese people that have been radicalized by Iran and are operating troops out of Lebanon as well as Syria and other parts of the Middle East. But right now we're talking about Hezbollah in Lebanon. And when we talk about an increase in UN forces and an increase in Lebanese soldiers, we're not talking about Hezbollah soldiers. We're talking about Lebanon's army. Third, the return of evacuated residents in northern Israel and southern Lebanon. That's the third part of this plan. Currently, there are very few Israeli civilians living in the north of Israel because it's just too dangerous. I personally know a handful of friends who are living with relatives or friends that are living in my building in order to stay safe, that they came all the way up from the north, and it's just not safe for them to live there right now because of threats from Hezbollah. With the withdrawal of Israeli troops from South Lebanon in the year 2000, a land border was never agreed upon, and instead there's actually a UN-enforced ceasefire zone or security zone, and so there's no actual border. This recent deal that is in discussions right now may actually establish a border between Lebanon and Israel for real. There's very vivid surveillance video circulating the web showing a Palestinian teenager attempting to stab border police officers in El Azaria in the West Bank. A 14-year-old is approaching the officer. In the video, it looks like he's coming close to ask a question. During this close conversation, the young boy pulls a knife out of the back side of his pants and then tries to stab the officer with it. Now, another officer came in to add some defense. Those officers shot and killed the 14-year-old suspect during this incident. No officers were injured. Separately, the IDF conducted overnight raids arresting 33 wanted Palestinians, including one accused of shooting at troops. Tensions in the region have been high since October 7th. Following October 7th, more than 3,000 wanted Palestinians have been arrested, with more than 1,350 affiliated with Hamas. The IDF continues operations in the West Bank, and security forces are on high alert in Israel. The Times of Israel news site has a heartbreaking story about a 23-year-old intern from Nepal who was living and working on a kibbutz in southern Israel on the day of October 7th. He was slaughtered by Hamas. His story is illuminating of the struggles that people have and how a massive attack like the one on October 7th shattered so many worlds, and not just the ones of Jews. Rajan Fulara was murdered by Hamas terrorists at Kibbutz Alumim in Israel on October 7th. He had only recently arrived in Israel for a year-long learn-and-earn internship studying agriculture on the kibbutz while also earning money for his family. Fulara and other Nepali interns had been instructed to seek safety in a bomb shelter during a rocket attack, but did not realize this kind of ground invasion was possible. They all entered the bomb shelter but were killed by grenades that Hamas threw inside, which mutilated many and killed others. Survivors described the grenades being thrown and the gunfire that also took lives, and discussed how as they exited the shelter, they had to exit over the bodies of their friends and colleagues. Fulara, holding a bachelor's degree in agriculture, had plans to return to Nepal after his studies and secure a good-paying job with the civil service. His family took on a hefty debt so that he could finance his education and travels. They expected that his success would create a big return on investment for them. The young man's body was sent back to Nepal for burial on November 5th. The tragedy left his family devastated, and apparently his parents went down to a nearby river to drown themselves after the news of the loss of their only son. Villagers spotted them and brought them home. We here at the Israel Daily News Podcast are sending our heartfelt condolences to the family, friends, and villagers in Nepal who are suffering together. Hamas took the lives of 10 Nepali people who were working and learning in the south of Israel near the border on October 7th. The Times of Israel has an excellent section of their website called Those We Have Lost, where they highlight the lives of individuals who have fallen during this heinous war, and that is where I found this piece that I have brought to you. Moving over from Nepal to Thailand, another country that had a population affected by the October 7th massacre, Ynet News profiled and highlighted the Thai angle through the lens of Bobby Sorapot, the leader of Thai workers from Kibbutz Nachal Oz. Believe it or not, but after they survived, they actually returned to the kibbutz to live and work. The Thai workers and Israel's army are the only people there at Kibbutz Nachal Oz at the moment. Sorapot was offered a chance to rejuvenate himself, and by rejuvenate, to go back to his homeland. He went back to Thailand for 2.5 months after October 7th and decided he was ready to return, despite the trauma he and his colleagues faced when they were literally hiding from terrorists on October 7th. During the assault, they sought refuge in a safe room, endured a 40 to 50 minute ordeal while terrorists were inside of their apartment, while they were in that one room locking themselves in, and those terrorists were completely destroying the place. He reports that after the violent assault, the kibbutz and his apartment were all swarmed with Gazan looters who came to take advantage of the situation. Now there is a new problem, he reports. It's a problem of wild dogs coming in from Gaza and immense economic losses, because at the beginning, before people started volunteering, there were no people available to milk cows. There were 400 cows on the kibbutz, but many of them were killed by terrorists, and others can no longer produce milk because they were so traumatized on October 7th that they are no longer able to produce milk. The Israel Daily News podcast was amongst the few and only reports that covered what happened to cows in the south of Israel on October 7th. I wrote about this and I podcasted about this months ago. There were hundreds of cows that were slaughtered by Hamas terrorists. I had interviewees telling me that they went down. I had interviewees who were animal rescue, and they went down and they saw all of these dead cows that had been shot dead by Hamas terrorists. Sarapat also expressed a confusion and dismay over the specific attacks. He questioned why the people of Gaza had targeted them, saying that the Thai workers had worked and shared everything they had with the Gazan workers, as they were all foreign workers in the south of Israel before October 7th. And he says that this is one of the things that makes him feel so disturbed. I want to thank all of you for your interest in Israeli affairs, Israeli politics, our world politics. I also want to thank all of you who personally finance and fund the Israel Daily News podcast with monthly contributions. You can support us with monthly contributions by going over to anchor.fm/Israel Daily News. You can contribute whatever feels good to you. To make a one-time contribution to our special wartime coverage, which I take very seriously, you can just type in my name, Shanna Fold, and go fund me into Google and find it right away. Thank you to our latest contributor, Kathy Goodman, who sent us her encouragement to continue on and her support. Thank you for that. If you have heard your name or you have donated and you did not get a response from me or you did not send me an email to begin with, send an email with your mailing address to shannafold@gmail.com and I will send you a handwritten thank you note to show you my appreciation. You can also support us by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. 2, you can share the show with a friend. And 3, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at israeldaily.news, as well as Shanna Fold. My name has 2 N's in it, and I'm very sensitive about that. You can also find us on Twitter at Israel Podcast. The Meteorological Service reports Israel has seen 14 straight days of rain, which has not happened in 30 years in the Holy Land. This steady downpour has allowed rainwater to seep into the ground, replenishing underground reserves and doing so without flooding. The service also says that the rain has raised the Sea of the Galilee, also called Lake Kinneret, 26 centimeters or 10.2 inches higher than it was previously. Some parts of central and northern Israel have already met or exceeded their annual average rainfall, which is measured starting in August. On the contrary, the southern desert region has not had a major increase of rainfall this year. That's because it's all falling right here in the center, right on Tel Aviv. Well, water is considered a scarce resource in Israel. This persistent downpour has actually been considered a blessing, despite there's a lot of Israeli people that are feeling a little frustrated that every single day they wake up and go to sleep with rain. However, we know that it's good for the plants and the trees, and maybe even to clean these dirty streets of Tel Aviv. All right, well, that is it for today's show. Today is Monday, February 5th, 2024. Tel Aviv has a low of 15 degrees Celsius and a high of 16 degrees. That's 59 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 61 degrees for the high. Subscribe to the Israel Daily News podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're hearing it from. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. And of course, it has a personal note from us at the top. You can sign up for that at our website, israeldailynews.org. Again, that's israeldailynews.org. A big thank you goes out to our social media director, Michelle Milner. I'm going to send you off now with a song called Dublin Day by Ariella Zaitlin. She's a prolific violinist, and I hope you'll enjoy her work. Have a great and productive day and an excellent week. Shavua Tov, everyone.